Welcome to Regenerative Rising's podcast, Elevating Stories, Activating Change. Today, I am talking with GT Dave. He is the founder and CEO of GT's Living Foods, and I am your host, Celine Diaris, the founder and executive director of Regenerative Rising. Welcome. I am honored and delighted to get to talk to you, GT. I am a longtime consumer of your incredible kombucha, and I can attest that I think it's super good for the body and the gut, and I just so appreciate the integrity of how you produce your product, because it's important when one feels confident in the quality of what you're choosing out there in the marketplace. So it's really, I just want to say thank you for maintaining such care in your products.
Oh, well, thank you, Celine. It's an honor to be here, and I appreciate the warm introduction, of course, the loyal support.
Absolutely. Well, I think, you know, I've been in the natural products industry for a long time, and I know a lot of what's behind the curtain. And it's important when you recognize a leader in a business who maintains the quality through a whole level of growth and expansion. And that's something that I know you have been just very fiercely loyal to doing. And I think it's why you guys are so successful. You know, you can taste it and you can feel it. So I just applaud your commitment to what you're doing. And it's inspiring, quite honestly.
Well, thank you. And you're right. I mean, I think those of us that are in the natural food space, we're very obsessive, right? We're obsessive with nature. We're obsessive with health. We're obsessive with uplifting people's lives. So it's not something we take lightly.
It isn't. And I think in a realm where we see a lot of other players enter into this market, their motivations are not necessarily always the same as the originators. And I think that, you know, 30 years I've been observing this market, and it's fascinating to me. Well, 30 years is an exaggeration. I'm not that old. So we'll roll that back 20.
You're just rounding up.
I'm rounding up very generously. But I have been, you know, sort of sitting in the circles for a while, and I just get excited when I really recognize and see authentic effort on an ongoing basis. The fact that you are still 100% controlling your business, I mean, that's also extraordinary. I'd love for you to share a little bit about how you've been able to accomplish that and be able to continue to grow. So if you'd share a little of your trajectory, how have you been able to keep this company really under your leadership?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, I think the best word that summarizes it is passion. Because I think when you're passionate about something, you refuse to settle. And in many ways, you refuse to sell out. So I love what you just said a minute ago about how you've been in the space for about 30 years. Because if I take my history of 26 years and round up, you and I are virtually on the same path. And the reason why that's interesting is even those that have been in the industry for 15 years, or even 20 years, really haven't noticed. There was a very specific change in the marketplace that took place like around 2005 to 2015. And that really was, in my opinion, during the time when other economies and other markets were struggling due to the Great Recession and things of that nature. But the one category, the one industry that continued to grow was health and wellness. And so what I know that signal to a lot of these opportunistic individuals and entities is, hey, this is a bona fide industry that actually grows when everything's down. And if you play your cards right, it can be very lucrative. So that really drew a lot of people into the space. And I'm sure you can resonate with this, is that I remember going to the Natural Food Expo, which is kind of like our Oscars, if you will, or our
totally
Golden Globes, whatever, you know, analogy you want to use. And year by year, it started off with, you know, a bunch of passionate individuals that loved the planet and loved food and loved nutrition and just loved life. And that was why they were there. And that's it. But then little by little, the patchouli faded and the Birkenstocks faded, and in came the suits and ties and the big glitzy booths. And next thing you know, Expo just became like an opportunity to sell your business, to sell a percentage of your business. And it became more business-like, which again is not a bad thing, but it is when you've lost your soul in the process. And I think in many ways, which is why I love talking to you today, I think that's what the world needs to be more cognizant of, is that the natural food space is actually in the process of being exploited. Like a lot of things we do in this world, we find something that's popular and then we try to kind of bastardize it, whether we know it or not.
You know, it's interesting you make that analysis or analogy, because I think interestingly, same is happening in the world of regeneration, the whole conversation around what is regenerative. And it hasn't been nearly as long of a conversation as the natural products conversation. However, because it has taken off with such power and there is so much interest in how it becomes this soil restorational vector, that the amount of money and players who I definitely question their authenticity of why they're showing up has happened incredibly fast. And to your point, I am with you when it comes to how do we elevate the truth? How do we keep what is clean and pure and authentic really resonating and being understood as a differentiation from that which is other than that?
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly it. And then that actually is my answer to your previous question of how do I do it? I really do it because I've seen how bad it can get. And so I kind of make a mental note or even a mental picture in my head of, I never, ever want to be that. I never want to see my product sold in plastic. I never want to see my product pasteurized. I never want to see my product having ingredients that I wouldn't personally consume. So that's really, honestly, the guardrails that I put up is, it's not really what I want, it's what I don't want. And to your point, again, everything in the space these days, and I think the internet and social media is kind of part of the reason it's so easy for something to become popular, but superficially, right, people don't really know the depth behind that story. And just like being regenerative, you know, it's a sexy term right now. So when things are sexy and popular, you have people that jump in and, you know, they barely scratch the surface of what the true mission is. And I think in the process of doing that, you can sometimes lose your way.
Absolutely. And I think it's, you know, we were talking before we started recording about, you know, what's happening in our ecosystems around the planet and how, you know, weather systems writ large are shifting and changing. And it's significant, it's impactful. And, you know, we were saying that if you have awakened and are tuning in and paying attention, now is a really difficult time.
It's true.
It's a very difficult time.
Yeah.
And I struggle with it every single day because, you know, I'm very interested in birds. And I pay a lot of attention to birds, migrational birds that come through Colorado, and then the ones that are here year round. And I'm noticing definite changes in the abundance of these birds. Their numbers are dropping precipitously in just a few years.
Yeah.
And that is troubling to me. And one of the interesting corollaries is insects. The number of insects has dropped by 70% by global mass. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah.
that is a magnificently large number.
Oh yeah. And to your point, not enough people are talking about that though. Right.
I agree.
More people talk about, you know, the hairstyle of Ariana Grande than they do about the shortage of bugs and the depletion of birds. And I mean, right behind me is a gloomy LA sky, but we're in the first week of June, right? This is very unusual, abnormal weather and climate that we're in. And you're right. I mean, when growing up, my parents would say, well, son, you know, ignorance is bliss. I didn't really know what that meant to the full degree. But now as I'm growing up, I'm an adult and I'm now a parent. Ignorance is bliss, but I'm sad or proud to say, depending on how you look at it, that I'm not very ignorant. I'm actually very aware.
Yeah.
And that awareness can be a little bit of a burden because I notice, and we were talking about this before, you know, I go to sleep at night and I'm worried about climate change. I'm worried about clean water. I'm worried about bees. I'm worried about, you know, all this stuff that, you know, 15 years ago, I was just worried about, do I have enough money in my bank account, and is my business doing well? But
right,
like,
right.
I certainly still have those concerns, but now layering on top of that are all these world concerns that are so much bigger than I am. And, you know, as we're dealing with political issues and COVID and all that stuff, what's kind of freaky in my mind is we've temporarily taken our eyes off of the climate, because like what I was blown away by is that nobody was really talking about the litter and waste that's coming from masks, gloves, all these, you know, PPE stuff that we're wearing to protect ourselves. We kind of immediately kind of shoved the idea of climate and waste in the back of our minds. And all we cared about was protecting ourselves, which I understand. But once this is all done, we're now going to have to deal with that mess.
Agreed. I love that you brought that up, because I think it's really interesting how we choose to be convenient in our thinking.
Yeah.
Is it convenient for me to think about this right now, or is that an inconvenience to me? And I'm very, very moved by the notion that we're all interconnected. There is no separation. Yeah. And the more we endorse that sort of false narrative of thinking that it's convenient or not convenient, I mean, that's why Al Gore called it the inconvenient truth, because it's not comfortable.
Right. We don't want to deal with it. It's not good news.
No, it is not good news. But, you know, it's what I find, what I'm also really very strident about is that I'm a future positive kind of person. And I think we have the capacity to create a future that is positive, but it does require a little bit of the discomfort of paying attention in the here and now.
I agree. We need to have a sense of urgency, because we're out of time and the time is now. We have to act,
exactly.
And we have to act fast, and we have to act together. Because that was the other thing that I've been meditating on more and more these days is, you know, it feels like a lot of us have a similar point of view, but we sometimes go on our own path. And I think there has to be unity. There has to be a united front, and we have to set aside special interest, ego, pride, all of that, and just focus on the most important thing, which again, I really think is healing the planet, because that's something that we all have in common. And of course, COVID taught us that we're more connected than we ever thought.
Agreed. And I have, you know, when all of that began, my hope, my prayer was that this experience, as such a shared experience on the entire planet, would help create that recognition of how closely connected we are biologically. You know, we have all kinds of racism, but our bodies, hello, they're all equally vulnerable and equally resilient. So how do we lean into this kind of reveal that Mother Earth has granted her unruly children to like, you know, tune in, kids, you know, mama ain't happy.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I agree that we're all citizens of the planet, and there really is only one race, and that's the human race. And the quicker we can recognize that and, you know, focus on that, I think the world would be a better place, because I think all the BS that we sometimes get caught up in would just clear away, and then we can really get back to business.
I mean, I have a lot of confidence in the kernel of wisdom that resides in each of us. You know, I think if we can activate that, if we can be some sort of stimulus to sort of awaken that knowing that's already there. I don't know the answer to that. I know, you know, through the work that we've been doing at Regenerative Rising, we think of ourselves as kind of a curator and corraler, bringing a lot of the different players from all over the world together to deepen into the conversation, but most importantly, to do it from a heartful place first.
Yeah, no, I agree. It really is trying to further that enlightenment, I think, that you're referencing, that we all have or had at one point, but kind of forgot about it as we got distracted with greed and other worldly things. I mean, again, certainly at my company, at GT's Living Foods, I mean, that's why we really focus on life and how life should exist, certainly exists within us, needs to exist in our food, and definitely needs to exist all around us. Because, of course, the opposite of life is death. And death is what is unfortunately slowly happening to our planet. So we really need to kind of reground ourselves and reroot ourselves in the importance of this philosophy of celebrating life, protecting it, and making sure that life is always around us.
Absolutely. Well, I love that you just mentioned the company and it's life, because everything that you make is a bioactively alive food.
Yes.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about your different products, because I love some of the new lines that you guys have come out with, in addition to the kombucha, which most folks are really familiar with. But you also have added Coco Yo.
Yes.
Right. And then you have your kefir waters. And what else? You've also added some other stuff.
Yeah, we have a medicinal mushroom drink called Alive that utilizes chaga, reishi, and turkey tail, which I'm sure you know these. I believe that where kombucha was 25 years ago is where medicinal mushrooms are right now, mm-hmm. right? They're slowly coming out of being unaware, and the tastemakers and trendsetters are really focusing on them, and that they really are the wave of the future. I believe that, you know, fungus and even algae will really save the world from our health and also helping to consume waste. So yeah, Alive is one of my personally very proudful products that we've released in the last couple of years.
Well, I definitely want to try it. I, as my staff knows, my morning coffee, which is a cold brew coffee to lower the acidity, I add reishi, lion's mane, and chaga powders.
Oh, nice.
To it. So I'm all in on
I'm preaching the power to the choir. You know about it.
I am singing with you. Totally. But I think it's exciting because I they've shown that fungus will eat the radiated materials in Chernobyl.
Yep.
So, I mean, Mama Earth has everything she needs.
It's she has all the solutions. We just have to listen.
She does. We have to listen, and then we have to be stewards and shepherd things along and help it happen. And I think, conversations like this and then amplifying them out and figuring out how do we get people excited. And I'd be curious, you live in LA, which is a trendsetting kind of town. I live in sleepy Colorado, which is, it's cool, but I mean, the vibe here is radically different. So what have you thought about in terms of how do you capture that kind of sensibility, particularly this, where there's a lot of star gazing at humans as stars? How do you think we can maybe use some of that to be activating for people to think a little differently?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think to your point, it really comes down to how you deliver that message, right? Because there's more than one way to communicate something. And that's why even with my company and our personal mission, we really take a lot of effort to not come off preachy or not even come off judgmental, because it's so easy. There's like a razor's edge between being informative and being somewhat judgmental or preachy. And obviously judgmental and preachy can really alienate people and really scare them off. So it really is, I mean, again, kind of like what we were saying earlier, is people are drawn to things that are sexy, attractive, fun, do a really nice way of kind of connecting them to the conversation. So that's why I think when it comes to being regenerative, being environmentally conscientious and eco-friendly and all those things, is that you really have to slowly start that conversation. It's almost like a staircase where you don't hit them over the head with the punchline, because they may not be ready for that. You slowly have to pull them into the conversation and then engage them in the conversation and help them understand how they can be a part of it and how this affects them. And by the way, how it can be fun. Right. I mean, you're seeing that, like an example that's just a random one that I'll give is how people are, through COVID especially, started to grow their own little food farms in their backyards, which started off somewhat recreational to just kind of kill time because they were working from home or not working, unfortunately. But through that even simple moment or simple experience, their eyes were opening to the importance of food and how food is grown. And so when you have that proverbial seed planted, then you can really start talking about, well, that's why we need to be cognizant of these monocrops or pesticides or what we're doing to the bees, because you saw in your own little isolated, home food farm, how those things were so important. Now imagine that times a million, and that's the world. So it's something like that, just really simplifying the message, but again, making it, you know, finding a way to connect it to the heart and to the home.
Right on. I think, you know, that sort of tangible experience that you're describing with, I know here locally, the local garden shop where I've been going for several years, they last year, they had never seen the kind of traffic that they had. Yeah. It was just, they were just like, oh my God, we don't even know if we're going to be able to support all of these people showing up, wanting to get into like people changing their entire yard and becoming more conscious of what's going to feed the butterflies. And I'll be sitting there having some conversation and someone will ask me, well, what do hummingbirds like? And what do butterflies like? And we'll talk about which flower, you know, and you can talk about the shape of the flower. There's all these beautiful things that I take for granted because it's just been in my reality for so long, but it's so beautiful to see people like leaning in and they're excited and they're want to be part of that sort of web of custody. So I agree with you. I think gardening probably is one of the most accessible, meaningful, easy steps into becoming aware of all these little interstitial connections.
Yeah, I agree. And then in addition to that, I mean, what we also saw during COVID, of course, is people starting to make more of their food at home. We saw a big wave of people even making kombucha at home, which I am perfectly fine with and actually quite excited by, is that when you make food on your own, you really realize what goes into it. And then you start understanding, hey, I didn't put that in my food, but I think when I buy it pre-made or even at a restaurant sometimes, it has so much more in it than I care to consume or that I want in it. So it really is eye-opening, is it, these little moments that I think we went through over the course of the last 18 months.
Exactly. I mean, bread making.
Yeah.
That went like crazy. And, you know, just people getting to experience like a sourdough and the rising of the dough and the whole process. I agree with you. I think there's been a lot of things that people have experienced that they would not have had the capacity and time to engage with that I do, you know, I wonder, you know, will this stay with us? Will we keep this in our repertoire? Will we still... Because I noticed myself as things have opened up, I've gone out to dinner, you know, a couple of times in the last week with friends. And I'm like, I love being served. I don't want to have to like wash another dish. But at the same time, you know, I agree. It's like there's a lot of experimentation happening out there because we were touching food more intimately, more directly.
Yeah. And that's why I think that's the importance of an ongoing conversation, right? I don't think the conversations that we're having today will stop, right? Because, you know, candidly, even if, God willing, we're able to fix the problems of the world, then we have to go into preventing them. Yes. So it's an ongoing conversation.
You're so right. I've thought about that. Like it's a never ending story. There's always yet another layer. It's a big mountain to climb.
It really is. It really is. And just when you think you're at the top, there's another mountain right behind it that's even bigger.
And that is so, so true. You know, so I think what that makes me think about is your younger years when you spent time in India. And yes. I'd love for you to share a little bit about how impactful that was for you. And what are some of the truths that have continued with you from those early experiences?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to share that because it's a big aspect of who I am today. So, you know, I was very fortunate to be born into a family that was very spiritual. And with that, it was an interesting world, though, to be honest, because it was a blend of East meets West, religion meets spirituality, which I'm very grateful for because I think in retrospect, I was able to see more of a holistic point of view and less of a niche point of view, which I think is really important and something that I make a conscious effort to maintain in my daily life even today. But so to give you an example, so I was raised a vegetarian. My mother was a vegetarian even when she was pregnant with me. So I was technically pregnant. I was technically a vegetarian in the womb.
Wow.
And then when I was born into a household that my, you know, I went to Catholic school. I was baptized Catholic. I was an altar boy, all that stuff. But on the flip side, in addition to going to church every Sunday and being an altar boy, like I said, I would also go to Sunday school and I would learn Sanskrit and Hinduism and Buddhism and how to meditate and chant and pray in a very different way. And then, of course, what was really the biggest moment that I can reference is when my parents took me to India. And they took me to India very many times throughout my young life, starting, I believe, as young as the age of 3, all the way up to about the age of 10 or 11. And it was really interesting on so many different levels, right? Because of course you had the spirituality conversation, which I could go on and on about, but it really is, this life isn't your only life. It's not your first, it's not your last, you're not your last, your reincarnation, karma, energy, how we're connected, how, you know, the universe put us here for a reason, put every living thing here for a reason. Everything has its purpose. Life is sacred. Like, I remember being a kid and like a spider would be in the house and me and my brothers would go to kill it. And my parents were like, no, 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 that is a piece of God. God right put on. That here on the planet for a reason. And we're like, but it's in the house and it's scary. And it was like, no, just capture it and then set it free. And, you know, again, at the time that was bizarre thinking, but over the course of many years, and of course, being to India and seeing such a different way of life, right? Like having to go fill a bucket of water and bring it into our flat, as they called it, to bathe, brush my teeth and flush my toilet, right? Not watching the electricity go out for hours, if not days, watching, you know, kids defecate on the street because they're homeless or seeing disease. It was, you know, very much almost like the leprosy that you would read in the Bible. And it was very eye-opening because, again, you know, being born and raised in Los Angeles, we live a very privileged life. And I don't think we're able to fully understand it and fully even appreciate it until you see what it's like to not have it. And that's what I'm very grateful my parents exposed me to. And so that became in many ways my foundation of, you know, live your life in the way that, you know, you want to be selfless, you want to make a positive impact, you want to be ready for when you're ready to graduate, if you will, to your next life, that you'll graduate and ascend, right? You'll become a better person, you've paid your dues, you've made good karma, all of that. And so then when kombucha naturally came into my life in the early 90s, my parents were making it, drinking it, became obsessive about it. It was one of the many kooky things they brought into the household. Because as we know, this is the 90s and being plant-based and, you know, fermenting tea and fermenting anything for that matter was not considered cool or even normal. So my parents were very much ahead of their time. And so they were making this thing called kombucha, loving it. I honestly wanted nothing to do with it because it was super freaky to me. It smelled like vinegar, tastes like vinegar. I was like, no, thanks, I'll pass. But it wasn't until it helped my mom with her breast cancer 2 years later that something just happened, to be honest. Like it was all these stars aligning of my mother's breast cancer, the suggestion from the doctors that it that this pungent tasting tea could have helped her, where I was in my personal life. I was 15 years old, going to Beverly Hills High School, you know, living life in the fast lane. I was ditching class, I was doing drugs, I was going nowhere. And all of a sudden, then I dropped out of high school because I wanted to turn a page. I wanted to essentially, as I told my parents, leave an environment of people who didn't want to be there and enter an environment of people who wanted to be there, because intention is a big deal to me. And so that's when I made that big decision. And that's when kombucha in many ways chose me. I decided to, you know, start to drink it. I fell in love with it. I fell in love with, of course, how it helped my mom. And I was hopeful that it could help others. And to be honest, that is still the mission today. Like, it's not about making money. It's not about being famous or rich or all those things that we kind of reference that unfortunately, I think plague our industry. It's really about spreading love and spreading happiness and health and good energy and good karma and things that come from the heart, because I candidly feel that that never gets old.
Well, it doesn't get old. And that is, thank you so much for your beautiful response to my question. It's, you know, you talked to some of the things that really jumped out at me is one of the terms you use is like energy. And I think what I often reflect on is that we're still operating in a Newtonian world. even though we've moved to the quantum physics as our understanding of the universe, but it hasn't really infused our way of perceiving and being.
Yeah.
But Eastern tradition already had that sort of recognition of the interconnection, that what we generate with our thoughts and our energy has a impact. It has reverberation, not only just for ourselves, but for that which is around us. And you mentioned breast cancer. I just had breast cancer. I was diagnosed last July, had to have a mastectomy. And I've been really investigating the connectivity and causal elements of what brought this into my life. People who know me, you know, when I tell them that I've had this experience, they immediately get very disturbed because my reputation is like, I'm like the, one of the cleanest eaters you could meet. And so it makes people frightened, frankly, that, you know, well, if she could get it, maybe
what's going to happen to me? No, it's
so true.
What's going
to happen to me?
Well, yeah. And first of all, thank you for sharing that, because I mean, that does bring me back to when my mother was diagnosed, because again, as I said, my mother was plant-based. My mother exercised. My mother did everything possible to take care of her health. And so when she was diagnosed, she actually didn't believe it, because the tumor that was in her right breast was the size of a golf ball. So she actually thought it was a muscle.
Whoa.
I mean, that's how convinced she was that she was, this was not, cancer was not even an option. But here's the thing is, and that's why the conversation we're having never gets old, is that you can do as much as you want or as much as you can to protect yourself, but we don't control what's around us.
No, we don't.
Right? So we did control. I mean, here in LA, you have chemtrails, you have spraying going on, we have radiation, we have EMF, we have our cell phones. I mean, the list goes on and on. The enemy is getting greater and is becoming there's more of them to fight off, and they're still just us. And I think we're at some point, I'm worried that we're going to be outnumbered, which again, back to you, is why it's, yes, you have to look at what was I doing, but it's also, but what's around me.
Agreed. And yeah. I think it's an and, because I, you know, for me, you know, having cancer come and knock at your door and you open the door and you're like, oh, I didn't. You weren't invited.
Yeah, I didn't invite you.
I did not invite you. Why are you at my table? But now that you're at my table, what can I learn from you? You're my teacher now. You're like the big teacher in the room. And I can't say what was the cause. I will never actually know. But I, when it comes to what do I have, like a whole nother level of authority around, which is like, what are the thoughts in my mind? What is the energetic that I hold in my system? Am I anxious or am I calm? Am I cultivating calmness or am I nourishing fear and anxiety? You know, and it, we talked already, you know, we live in, if you're paying attention, there's a lot to feel anxious about, but that's not necessarily the most helpful response to it. It's, so I've been really working with what is a different response. It doesn't take me out of being aware, but the way I move into my state of awareness, can I bring the temperature down? And I'm still working on that. I would say I don't think I've like got my silver key that or gold key.
Oh, yeah, you haven't mastered it. It's almost impossible to master.
I'm close. No. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you this. Well, you know, it's great that you're bringing that up, because, you know, frankly, that is what ultimately was my mother's realization. Right. It wasn't, you know, a lot of times we think of health as physical, right? We think of what I'm physically eating or my physical fitness or my physical body. But what she kind of recognized through the process of elimination was emotional health, right? She, being a mother and having three boys and, you know, all the challenges that sometimes life can throw at you, she recognized later on it was how she processed stress. Because there's really two ways to process stress. You internalize it and release it, or you internalize it and let it fester. And just like we were talking about earlier, it's not sometimes even just your own personal stresses. It could be world stresses. It could be politics, environment, you know, whatever, world affairs. And that's why, and sorry to kind of change the subject slightly, is that's why I actually think what's going to save the world are plant medicines, right? Mm. So whether that's marijuana, whether it's medicinal mushrooms, whether it's psilocybin, whether it's ayahuasca, because again, for those that are listening, listen, I'm not trying to endorse drugs, but that's why I didn't say these are drugs. I said, these are plant medicines. And the reason why these plant medicines are so incredibly powerful is, in addition to tapping into everything that they can teach us about the world and energy and connectivity, they can also teach us how to let go. I mean, to be honest, every night before I go to sleep, I take a little bit of THC. And what it is, it's almost like a ceremonial, spiritual experience where all my stresses, all my troubles, all my egocentric worries just leave my body. Mm. And I think of my mother each and every time because I think of her and I think that's what she wasn't doing. And that's, and that's, those are her words, not mine. She didn't call it just flush it out. And I think that's what we need to do every day. I mean, the night is the death to the day. So I think even when we go to sleep, we have to kind of kill off the bad energy and then start the day with a clean slate.
Ah, I love what you just said. That's 100%. I thank you. Because I think the process I've been inside of is very scary for other people to hear.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of accountability. And yet I think that's the point of being in a human form in the first place. We're here to learn how to be in deep reciprocity and accountability for what we are as a presence. And that's part of the mastery dance, is how do we become in a higher level of connectivity to the wisdom that is, and can we surrender the hubris of our thinking we know? I mean, that's probably my biggest opportunity right now, is the hubris of thinking I know, you know, yeah. Like, oh, the birds are dying. I know that's what that means, or this or that. And so there's a way to really step into a deep humility that just kind of surrenders to how much I don't actually know. And yeah. I can relax into that not knowing.
Yeah. And how we're really not in control. We think we are. Control is, and I listen, I'm preaching to the choir right now because I'm a control freak, like type A, but it's something that I'm working on. Because the sooner I identify that there's really no such thing as control, the better I will be.
It's true. I'm going to re-identify. I'm Celaine Diarras, your host with Regenerative Rising, Elevating Stories, Activating Change. And my guest today is GT Dave. He is the founder and CEO of GT's Living Foods. We're talking about a lot of different things. You know, we're not just stuck in the food story. We're in the life story. And it's an appropriate conversation with this amazing man because he's really made it his life's work to bring vibrant living products to market to nourish our bodies. And our bodies are part of what we are, but there's also this more invisible dimension, but we all know it in ourselves. We know we are more than just a form. It yes. doesn't have to be religious or spiritual for you, but we can all recognize that there's more going on in our individual story than is easily explained or even understood.
I agree. There's more than meets the eye.
Which is, I think, exciting. And, you know, you were talking about as a young child, getting to go to India and sort of like as a three-year-old, there's just like this infusion you were probably absorbing by being there. And then later you got to go when you were more cognizant of what you were witnessing. When I was about 3.5, I was outside and all of a sudden everything around me was imbued with light. And the trees were sparkling, the soil was sparkling, the bricks in the house were sparkling, I was sparkling, the bugs, everything I saw was just emanating light.
Yeah.
And I never forgot that. Like that was the anchor upon which my whole existence was framed, was this ability, this moment where I got to see that there's more going on here than meets the eye, and it's really beautiful and it's extraordinary and it's ubiquitous. It's in everything. It's not choosing one thing versus another. It was even yeah. things that you think of as like man-made. They yeah. still are made of the stuff of the universe. So it's that light, that life, that power is there.
Yes. And that's my mom always says, we're, you know, every living thing is made out of stardust. right? We're all made out of the same thing. And if you can open your eyes to it, I mean, it's life-changing. It completely changes your point of view and it changes the way how you behave.
It's true, big time. And I want to come back to what you said right before I identified the program again. When it comes to those sacred medicines, I am totally in agreement with you. I myself have had journeys, and I've really only sort of done one. I did an ayahuasca ceremony many years ago now, and I waited a long time. I had the opportunity to do it, and I was very, for me, it was like a very big deal. It was like the medicine, the big mother medicine, and I was not going to go into that experience until I felt like I was really prepared. Yeah. And ready. And my big experience I had inside of that was this extraordinary death journey that the medicine took me on. And I literally watched everything I love dying, including the planet itself. They blew up the planet. It was just like overwhelming. But what happened is I kept surrendering to the story I was being shown by these plant beings. And I ended up floating in like space in this cradle of energy. And my understanding in that moment was that life is indestructible because it's the force of life itself, not the form. You know, you hear in Buddhism, form and formlessness. And I was just given this visceral experience that my attachment to form, like back to my worry about the birds, the attachment to form is not the correct attachment. It's really being in service to the animating force behind all that is, and that is indestructible. It doesn't mean we don't need to be responsible for form, because we do, but at the same time, it's like coming back to that reduction of stress is to be leaning into that deep acknowledgement of this indestructible force of life that animates all things. It will be here whether we're here to witness it or not.
Oh, I agree 100%. And that's, I think, the interesting sometimes dilemma is that, you know, when you start to think about it, right, this moment right here is like a millisecond or even a fraction of that, even in the grand scheme of things. I mean, when you look up in the sky at night and see the stars, like we are one of like a billion other energies out there, but that doesn't mean that we don't take this moment seriously. So it's that interesting balance of like understanding the big picture, but still being present and still dealing with what's in front of you. But it comes with a little bit of detachment, is what I think you're referencing, I love what you just said, because that's a similar experience that I had in my recent ayahuasca ceremony, which happened earlier this year, is that it was just understanding, seeing the world from a different point of view and understanding that energy is sometimes greater than what we understand. So there's beauty and freedom in that. But again, that almost reinforces what we're doing right now.
Yes. And I think is one of the interesting sort of what elders will share around a circle. It's like none of this abdicates your accountability and your responsibility. In fact, it makes it even more so.
Yes.
Right? Because if you know, if you see, then you're even now going to be having a higher requirement to show up with that understanding as your guide, and it will shape the choices that one makes and the way one relates to any others, because it's literally that beautiful namaste greeting to recognize, like, whether I know you or not, there is the divine presence in you. And for me to really be in alignment to who I am really seeking to be, I have to stay in that acknowledgement.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow, we're going really into it. I love this. this is awesome. This is the kind of conversation I'd love to have.
Me too.
But, you know, and I think when we talk about business, which I think is also part of, you know, the audience for this program, you know, this is important for how we show up and do business. If we want to be a regenerative enterprise is holistic. And this is part of a holistic frame. It includes our multidimensionalness as a human being and how we live from that in whatever we're up to in the world.
Yes, I agree. And that's why in many ways I see my business, my brand, my products as a platform, a stage, a foundation, a launching pad, whatever you want to call it, for a greater conversation, right? I think that the days of businesses being exclusively transactional, which is buy, sell, will no longer work. And I think that's why, regardless of what you're doing or what you're selling, there has to be a greater purpose.
Agreed. And I think it's, I love that you brought up that transactional motif, because I think now we're moving into a relational motif. Yes. And I've heard you speak to the sort of that there's an opportunity for us to heighten our masculine and our feminine sensibilities and to bring that forward in life. And I think you, as a man who has identified and come out as gay, is obviously you're comfortable in your, yes, your versatility as a being. I'm versatile in my being, and I'm very comfortable in that, you know, there is no one thing really.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's no one size fits all.
Mm-mm, no, thank gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, when I love to remind people, it's like, if you walk outside to a non-chem treated lawn and look down, you will see a host of different plants all coexisting right next to each other. And they have a cooperative relationship. It's no different for we as humans to be able to recognize how much more we could co-create if we were living in that kind of mutuality. That's what regenerative principle, one of them is mutuality, you know?
Yes.
You have to consider, and you know, if you think about Christianity, you talked about being growing up in Catholic Church. I grew up in the Protestant, and I was in the South, which was the Bible Belt sort of realm. And you think about some of the most common precepts that people like to throw around, like love your neighbor as you love yourself, or do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And then you think about how rare is that actually as a true honored way of being inside of circles that call themselves Christians.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Those two philosophies really, in my mind, is all you need. But to your point, you really don't see it in practice, mm-mm, right? It's really more about the hell conversation and the judgment conversation and don't do that or else, can't be this, you have to be that. And that's, you know, what I struggled with being brought up in Catholicism. I was like, there is so much judgment here. I thought love is the way, not hate.
I brought that up in my Sunday school class and they told me to go sit in the corner. Because I was saying, why are the Black people all living in this one part of town and there's no interaction? That doesn't seem like what Jesus was saying. Exactly. And I was just like, you don't talk. Mm-mm. No, shush, over, shush.
Yeah.
But it's true. And I think that's the tragedy of this present moment, is how lost we are from these higher teachings that are part of the canon of multiple religious spaces.
Yes.
It's in all of them.
Yeah.
Because it's the truth.
I agree. You know, the one saying that this holy man in India that we referenced earlier that my parents took me to see when I was a young boy, one of his kind of best sayings that I gravitated to was, like every river leads to the ocean, every religion leads to God. And I think that statement kind of summarizes the point that you just made, is that there is this commonality with all religions. I think the fundamental intent is to, you know, find peace, love, and happiness, and eventually enlightenment. But I think the way that they start to label those things and the guardrails they put on and all the criteria and prerequisites really change the conversation. And that's why I think, you know, there's wars being fought over religion, which is crazy in my mind, is that two people that technically believe in the same thing, but just in different ways, are killing each other over that.
Yeah, right. It's another one of those, like, when will we as a species figure this out together?
Yeah.
We don't really have time to not have figured this out. In fact, I sort of feel like the planet is starting to usurp this, and it's only going to get more so. I mean, I don't want to go into all of the depressing data out there, but the climate as it changes affects how food is able to be grown. The loss of soil life affects the nutrient density of food. So what we're putting in our bodies, is it providing everything that we need to really be vibrantly healthy? So it's all, again, it comes back to that interconnectedness, which is why I think having these conversations that are not just the nuts and bolts type of dialogue, but it's about these more nuanced aspects of what it is to be a human being, you know, what it is to be driven by a higher dimension, if you will, or another, I don't want to use higher because that's not quite it, but other dimensions of care.
Yes.
So that how we're engaging is, you know, I love the word holistic. It's, we're considering the well-being of another human being. We're considering the well-being of the water and the land and all the creatures that are multi, you know, dependent on these things as much as we are.
Yes.
If that's
inclusive.
Part of it's inclusive. Exactly. Yeah. So business that's inclusive is, like you were saying earlier, that's the type of business that's going to rock the world.
Yes, I agree. And especially when you're, yes, especially when you're making food, because as I've said before, you know, food is one of the most sacred things that you can make, because you're essentially harvesting it from the earth, which is sacred in itself. But then what you do with it is, you know, God willing, you use it to nourish yourself or another human. And, you know, there's very few things on this planet that are as intimate as putting something inside your body. That could be medicine or poison. And I think that's why, hopefully sooner than later, and I know we're on the path, but it seems to not be happening fast enough, in my opinion, is understanding the importance of what we put in our bodies, right? So yeah, absolutely.
Well, I agree with you. And I think, I think maybe some of what we've touched on when we think about some of the experiences people have had more broadly during the COVID year plus time of being more connected to food, being more connected to actually what it takes to grow food and seeing the just phenomenal fecund power of the earth to just like shoot things up from a seed. I remember the first time I planted a garden, it was just sort of like a more of a little herb garden in a townhome my husband and I had when we first got married. And I put the seed in, and then every day I came out and looked to see, has it sprouted? And then when it sprouted, I like came out every day to see how it was growing. I was so enraptured with the power of this little tiny seed that eventually became this beautiful big sage plant and this beautiful, I don't even remember the other herbs I had, but that was magic. And yes, it was real magic.
Yes. No, I agree. I mean, you don't have to go too far to witness life at its finest. I mean, whether it's, as you just referenced, a sprout coming from a seed and then turning into a bush, a tree, a flower. I mean, that is pure magic in my mind. And, you know, I was able to recently witness the birth of my firstborn, my baby boy, Bloom, is his name. And I'm telling you, I've said this before, so forgive me if you've heard it, but when you witness life coming out of a human, it's just, it really is. It's a miracle. You like, angels are there, spirits are there, there's vibration, there's energy. It's just like, it just changes you forever. And again, I thought like I knew a lot about the importance and sacredness of life, but I think the ultimate is witnessing the birth of a human.
Day arrival. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really remarkable.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
What a wonderful, wonderful new piece and chapter.
Yeah, it really is a gift. Yeah, and it's eye-opening. I mean, again, I think that's what the theme of this conversation is that you can never stop learning. And that learning comes from constant awareness and constant observation. And even something like becoming a parent just has made me a different person than I was 6 weeks ago before he was born. So I, you know, I'm very grateful to have this new point of view.
Well, I mean, to talk about something that will really challenge your A-type patterns.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an awesome opportunity around those, all those aspects of surrender and letting go and allowing, because, you know, to be welcoming this new presence, which I know you are leaning into this new being as a unique presence. And how can you serve his unfolding as the being that he is, you know?
Yes.
And that's, yeah. I don't think there's any more honorable service to render than that.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, again, within minutes, your life changes. You're forced to be selfless because now this little living thing relies on you for everything. And your world gets very small in certain ways, but in many ways, your world gets very big because your eyes are now open to life and family and motherhood and fatherhood and childhood and all those things that I think I'm embarrassed to admit, as, you know, being a professional, living the life that I've lived for the last 25 years, you sometimes forget about that because it's not in front of you. You're not experiencing it.
Of course. I mean, and, you know, I've taken a tour of your house with Cody Co. I really want to meet your owl too.
Good memory. You're very into pop culture. I'm impressed.
Hey, you know, Google is my friend. But I, no, seriously, it's like, I love that you're so honest about the transition of, you know, you've been living a beautifully high style reality and you've created an enormous amount of beauty around you, not just in your business, but also in your personal space. And, you know, suddenly there's like little hands that are going to be grabbing new things. And I mean, it's just, it's so like the whole frame changes, everything changes. You're right.
Exactly.
You're right.
Yeah.
Ah, well, I am so excited for this conversation, and I would really like to make sure we get to do this again.
I would love that.
I appreciate it. I think that in sort of wrapping up, I guess I would ask you, what is your kind of word to the wise as we all are kind of beginning to emerge from COVID? What would you say, don't forget this, or not frame it that way, but what must we remember?
Yeah, I'd say the best advice I could give is to always follow your heart and always lead with love. Because at the end of the day, I think the commonality that we share with everybody, whether we know it or not, is that we're all truly seeking love. We all want to give love. We all want to get love. And the quicker we can simplify our point of view and perspective to something as clear and concise as that is, I think everything just kind of unfolds in a favorable way. And in that, it really is in the process kind of suppressing and at some point even killing the ego. Because the ego is what we think is who we are, but it's not. It's just a disguise.
That is excellent. And nothing could be added to that, GT. That is beautiful. Love is the way. Love is the path. And you're right. Once we sort of allow that as our fundamental state of knowing and being, everything follows.
I agree 100%.
Awesome. Well, you have been listening to Regenerative Rising, Elevating Stories, Activating Change. I'm Celine Diaris, your host. And with me today has been GT Dave, the founder and CEO of GT's Living Foods. I hope you all are enjoying and have enjoyed our very elevated conversation. I know I have delighted in having this time with you.
Thank you. Likewise, thank you so much for having me on. It was such a joy to talk to you and have this conversation today.